You think Richard's views on asteroid Vesta or something? Wait till he talks about Comet Elenine in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Richard C. Hoagland this hour. And Richard, can you give us a shuttle update? What's going on there?
Well, they just gave us a weather forecast. Get this, George. It is perfectly clear at Cape Canaveral tonight, all of Florida. It's the best weather for a landing of the shuttle in the entire 30-year history of the program.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
You know, I've got NASA on in the background. I'm watching live cameras. The lights of Titusville are twinkling. The runway lights are laid out. It's a gorgeous night in Florida for the ending of the 30-year shuttle program. And in about 45 minutes, just before we close our show tonight, they will be doing the burn over the Indian Ocean to bring this program and these astronauts home for their one last time.
You know, it's kind of emotional when you think, Richard, of those astronauts that they were in the Challenger and then the Columbia with this program as it comes to an end. I hope people never forget them.
Well, I think, as I said earlier, we're going to be building on the incredible legacy of these dedicated men and women, some of whom have lost their lives, as part of a grander vision. And I'm really strongly feeling tonight that we're on the threshold at every level, symbolically, physically, economically, and politically, of a game changer, because if we weren't, we wouldn't be seeing what NASA's providing us in the clear. They're even providing TIFF images, George. Now, TIFF images, for people who aren't into computers, are the best form of imaging, digital imaging, you can get. If you get a TIFF image, you can take it into Photoshop or into other programs. You can work with it. You can enhance it. You can look in shadows. You can magnify details. You can change gamma, contrast, and all that. If you try to do it with JPEGs, all you get are a bunch of artifacts that are not real, because the compression process of the program limits you in terms of what you can do. And NASA's deliberately put out JPEG after JPEG over the years so that we couldn't work with these images. On this mission, on this Vesta mission, the Dawn spacecraft is sending back, as I said, one clear image per week, almost like time-released aspirin, like they're delaying it to the last possible moment, the inevitable when CNN or Fox or other networks go, holy cow, look at that. Because the images that we got a few days ago were taken from about 10,000 miles. The final images in the next few months, they're going to put this spacecraft down in an orbit that is about 100 miles above the surface of a 300-mile-wide body.
And how long will it stay out there? 6 months, a year?
No, a year.
Jeez.
They're going to be orbiting in polar orbit. Remember, Vesta orbits, or orbits, it spins on its axis. Its day is 5 hours, 20 minutes. So as the spacecraft orbits in its polar orbit, the asteroid will spin beneath it. So in the matter of weeks, they will map the entire surface and then map it again and map it again as they get closer and closer and closer, and the images get bigger and bigger and bigger. We're going to have images, George, at the end of this process, unless something unusual happens, that are 100 times better or 100 times bigger than the one you're looking at on your computer screen right now.
And do you actually think, though, if we can see structure, they're going to let us have it?
They're already letting us have it. That's my point. They have never gone this far to get their feet wet ever in the history of the program since I've been paying attention. And that's decades, George. Remember, I've been at this for a long, long time. I see the winds of change with a capital C. And if this is what I think it is, if the honest guys in NASA have set this up to finally blow the doors off what is out there, everything else changes. Economics, politics. I mean, there are so many correlations here symbolically that they've set up. Is it an accident that the Atlantis shuttle, named after the fabled civilization of thousands of years ago, that was, we presume, a high-tech civilization of our ancient pre-dawn history, that shuttle is landing tonight on the very anniversary of our going to the moon 42 years ago tonight?
Good point. Good point. Now, there's another object out there that you claim also could be artificial.
Well, it's not that I'm claiming. The numbers are claiming.
Well, tell me. Tell me more. Why?
When you look at the solar system, when astronomers look at the solar system, the first thing they do is they chart orbits. You know, it basically takes three observations to determine the orbit of something orbiting a planet or a star or the sun, etc. Three observations. There are now over 3,000 observations of this little speck in the dark called Comet Elenine that was discovered by a Russian named Leonid Elenine, who works at a mathematics institute outside Moscow, who detected it on CCD imagery, digital imagery, taken by a remote robotic telescope via the internet. He's in Moscow. The telescope is south of me here in New Mexico. And on the night of December 10th of last year, 2010, Elenine takes four images, looks at them because they're sent back electronically to his computer sitting in his office or in his home, and lo and behold, he sees this little fuzzy speck. It's a comet. And he calls it, because that's what the IAU, you know, describes as procedure.
Right.
He calls it after himself, Elenine, of course. Mm-hmm. Every, you know, like Shoemaker-Levy, discovered by, you know, two guys, Shoemaker-Levy.
Gene Shoemaker and the other
and
guy.
Hale Bopp. Yeah. Two guys named Hale and Bopp. So Comet Elenine in December of last year is discovered. All hell breaks loose on the internet. You know, because you've probably gotten the 50 zillion emails that I'm getting.
Yeah.
And the posts and all the crazy crap about the fear tactics, the fear porn, the fear mongering, the YouTube videos, the declarations of disaster and Nibiru and brown dwarfs.
It's the Hopi prophecy. It's everything.
Oh, my God. Everything in the kitchen sink is being thrown at this little speck. And I'm asking myself, why is there this incredible overreaction for something which, frankly, on any average day in an astronomer's life, wouldn't even, unless you were Elenine, and of course he's very proud because he discovered it, you wouldn't even give it the time of day. It's projected course around the sun. It's projected by the normal astronomical models for comets to basically hover at the threshold of naked eye visibility. It's supposed to get no brighter than about 6th magnitude, meaning that if you're in a dark sky, like in New Mexico, you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're
right.
In a city, and most people listening to us are in cities tonight,
you won't see
you're not going to see a thing.
No.
It's not going to be spectacular. It's not going to have a huge tail. It's not going to have a great name like Halley. It's not going to be like some of the great comets of the last several decades, Comet West and several others. It's just a non-entity. It's one of 100 little objects like this that zip through the inner solar system every year. And unless you see them on the SOHO imagery taken of the sun with the coronagraph, nobody notices.
But this one is getting more notoriety than any of them.
It's like it's Madonna or, you know, Alba or you know, Lady Gaga. It's become the Lady Gaga of the astronomical universe, and it doesn't deserve it.
You listen to Lady Gaga, too? You're pretty hip, aren't you?
Unless.
Good for you.
So I start looking at this object, and I'm saying, now, why in the world is all this fear porn being poured on this insignificant little speck that's going to come no closer than 22 million miles? And as I start going through the official JPL ephemeris, which is very nicely placed online, including a nice little applet where you can run the solar system forward and backward and watch this thing come through the solar system and align itself with various planets. And, oh, there's even a story out there that in aligning itself with planets, it's going to cause huge major earthquakes on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every piece of nonsense you could write about something like this has been written, and mostly it's in the form of YouTube videos. And I'm looking and I'm saying, why are they all so absolutely trapped in this obsession over this little object that is not going to do anything under normal circumstance? So I start looking at the numbers, and immediately, ding, 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 as Art would say, because the numbers are freaky, George. This thing is going to zip by the sun at closest approach on September 11th of 2011. Now, there's a controversy because if you're in Greenwich, it's still going to be 2010. But if you're in the Far East, like India, like China, like Australia, it's already September 11th. Why is that important? Because there's a certain friend of mine who's no longer with us named Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote a very interesting book called Rendezvous with Rama. projected for, I think, about 100 years from now, when an object like Elenin literally appears on people's radar, on their telescopes and other observation systems, and our technology is at a stage then, as Arthur projected, where we could send out a spaceship to rendezvous with it and ride along with it, even though it is on a course through the solar system only once. Which, of course, brings me back to Elenin. Elenin's initial orbit, as projected by NASA by JPL, which really rang my chimes, was a hyperbolic trajectory.
What's that mean?
What that means is it's an object which has never been near the sun before, and when it leaves, it will never be back again. It's an uncaptured object. It's coming through like a bullet out of the dark, out of interstellar space, out of the galaxy to make a one-time visit and a hairpin turn around the sun at tens of thousands of miles per hour, and then it will flee back to the dark, receding from the sun over years and
be gone forever,
never to return. That in itself was really weird because
that is weird.
All of the history of astronomy, George,
they come back.
They have never charted a hyperbolic comet in the history of mankind. So I'm now saying to myself, okay, it's hyperbolic. It's supposed to be really unusual, and it's going to reach closest approach over the place of the Earth that Arthur wrote about in Rendezvous with Rama on September 11th, which is a really important date for us living here on Earth, but anybody outside the Earth, who would care? So the next date I looked at was the closest approach to Earth. And if you're not sitting down, you better sit down for this one. Because the closest approach of Elenin, 22 million miles away, kind of ahead of us, across our bow, on October 16th, just a few months from now, is going to be at 1950 hours Greenwich Mean Time, 19.5.
A number you have used for a long time.
Well, it's not me using it. It's a number that shouldn't show up. Statistically, if you got an object coming in at random over the course of the 4 billion years of the solar system and the Earth existing, there is no way in God's Earth that it can come closest to the Earth at a crucial, hyperdimensionally significant moment on a terrestrial clock timed for when it's going to be closest in terms of Greenwich Meridian. Just can't happen. It's not in the cards. And there's so many other numbers that I could get into that I just don't have time tonight. Now, what I can do is to tell people who are now so frustrated because I'm describing images and I'm describing data that best needs to be seen. Well, fortunately, in the next couple of weeks, on the night of August 6th in Leeds, England, I will be appearing at the Exopolitics Conference in Leeds, the third annual conference, the Expo. And if you go to a website I'll give it out in a second, you can find a way to get there if you're in Europe. And as you know, George, we have a huge contingent of close listeners in Europe.
Yeah,
we proved that when we went to Amsterdam in the spring, and I was recognized out of nowhere by a random person coming out of the kitchen in the restaurant we were eating dinner at. So for anybody in England or in France or in Belgium or any of the Low Countries or the Scandinavian countries, if you want to come and see the images of Vesta, if you want to see the data on Elenin, and by then we should have some amazing imagery from the Stereo B spacecraft that NASA has positioned to take close-up images in the next few days. I will be at this Leeds conference, and the website, if you got a computer, is simply exopolitics-leeds.co.uk.
Do you have that linked up at the Enterprise?
It'll be on our Facebook website.
Facebook,
which is facebook.com/Richard C. Hoagland.
Okay, very good. Now, with all this happening, how do you tie this into this scenario of what NASA's going to do?
This is the cool part. Because obviously, if this object has been sent to us by someone, it's got to be intentional with a design and a purpose for this time. And that's where I'm starting to think seriously what I call the time capsule model, which is that this thing has been sent to us maybe by, and this is where the last flight of Atlantis comes in, If there was, George, an Atlantean civilization, a kind of a general nomer for an ancient civilization of incredible high-tech capacities, not the Type 2 that we've talked about, which is millions of years old, but one of the subsequent descendants in our own history here on this planet. And this civilization basically wanted to send its future selves a message in something like 13,000 years, half the precessional cycle. Now, why is that number important? Because in striking contrast to JPL's insistence that this object is hyperbolic, Elenin himself has calculated a 13,000-year period for this object, meaning it could have been sent on a trajectory 13,000 years ago, arriving back home in the inner solar system now as a flying time capsule through interplanetary space with some kind of vital information for now as we approach the end of the Mayan calendar, as we approach the need for this information as a kind of an ultimate backup to all the other monuments that are built around the planet, such as the Great Pyramid, you know, the things in India, the things in Australia, the things in Russia, the things in England. In other words, if some civilization wanted us to basically know how to persist and survive what the planet might be going to do at the end of the calendar, sending us a time capsule with information that could not be interfered with.
Well, how are we going to get it?
One of two ways. Either they projected that our space technology from 40 years ago should have achieved the level of being able to rendezvous, George, which is why what we've been doing over the last 40 years is an incredible crime against humanity, or they have arranged that this thing will broadcast either on radio waves or by means of lasers for primitive backward civilizations like ours, in which case tonight, to the Coast audience worldwide, if anybody is a radio amateur astronomer, if anybody is a radio ham, you need to start listening in the direction of Elenin to see if it's broadcasting, because you can't count on the official networks, the official radio astronomy observatories, the official old boys club to tell you if they receive a signal.
So we can't turn SETI, what's left of SETI, to listen.
Well, we could if we can get to Paul Allen, if we can basically say, hey, you know, there's something really curious coming in. Why don't you take a look and see if
they're out of money? Something. They're out of money. He'd have to write another check.
So
I don't know if he's got it anymore.
It's not that expensive, George. Believe me.
I know that.
Because you know exactly what you're aimed at. It isn't a search. It's a listening on a specific target. Now, if there is a secret space program, which I firmly believe there is, that space developed on two tracks 40 years ago when Kennedy was killed. There's the NASA that we see, which is limping along with shuttles, and then there's the space program we don't get to see, which has anti-gravity and saucer-type ships and control of the torsion field and free energy, which gives them their power source, etc. Then it's very possible that a scenario like what Arthur wrote in Rendezvous with Rama is going to take place in secret, and they will rendezvous with this object. They will go inside. They will find what's waiting, and they will keep it to themselves, which is why what NASA's doing with the Vesta imagery tonight is so amazing, because it looks like someone is blowing the whistle on an inside agenda and trying to make what's really out there finally public. And if that's true, they will do the same with Elenin. And so the next few months are going to be extraordinary. Probably the most exciting that we've lived through since we landed on the moon 40 years ago tonight.
Back with calls with Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast show, it's Psychic Prediction Night. Three separate psychics talking about what you can expect in the future. When we come back with Richard C. Hoagland, we'll wrap up our discussion with him and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Richard C. Hoagland. Let's go to your calls now. We'll go to our Skype line to start. Katie in Wasilla, Alaska. Hi, Katie.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yeah. Richard, you just mentioned that this may be something that has been sent out to us and has come home. Are you saying that this is maybe someone else's version of SETI?
No, I think it's someone else's version of a long, long, long distance call. Remember, if there was an ancient civilization, us, 13,000 years ago, for whom the shuttle is named, that's about to land in 15 minutes, if they foresaw that we would have problems at a certain date because the Mayan calendar is celestially connected and the potential Earth problems might be celestially connected via the physics we've been looking at, they might have had the foresight to send us a message, a time capsule in an orbit, because orbits always come back. It's like boomerangs. An orbit, if you set it up right, you can rely on it like clockwork, like, you know, the train's running on time. Except this would have been a very long orbit, 13,000 years in duration, designed to bring it back now when we could use the information it might contain that might, in fact, save civilization. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. These are called scenarios. I can't say any of this is true for absolute certain, but we got to look. We need to listen. We need to get radio astronomers listening. We need to get people looking. For instance, if these guys were really, really smart, they may have said to themselves, well, look, by the time these future guys arrive and evolve and all that, they may have all kinds of problems like human beings have. They may not develop the technology to go out and rendezvous and pick up what we are sending them in person. We may need to send it by means of something primitive like radio. We may need to show them with some kind of celestial fireworks in the sky that this thing is in fact in the solar system so they even know to look, in which case then it might become the confirmation of the Hopi prophecy of the blue star, which is supposed to arrive at the end of an age.
That's right.
When disclosure takes place, when the secrets are dropped, when the Kachina dancing in the public square removes his mask and reveals the truth. In other words, all of these mythologies may be focused on this object, which for some reason has become the object of every imaginable fear and pernicious, vicious, distorted lie that you can imagine. And in the big picture, I'm thinking, with that much energy poured into the dark side against this thing, is it possible that it really could herald the dawn of something extraordinary and wonderful? Like Arthur Clarke said, in 2010, the year we make contact, something wonderful is coming. Well, remember, this object was discovered in 2010. If it is intelligently controlled, if it was sent to us by ourselves, it would mean that Arthur and a handful of other people were in on the secret, in on the plan, and were trying to give us, in the deniable form which fiction is, a warning as to what may be coming and to be prepared.
You know, I'm in this running battle, friendly battle with Stephen Bassett, where he believes disclosure is imminent. And I keep telling him, and I've been telling him now for 14 years, governments will not tell us what's going on. So in this, Richard, I don't think they're going to tell us anything.
Well, I don't think they want to, but maybe they are being forced to.
Maybe.
The way NASA's behaving, and even the mainstream has been kicking up its heels and actually complaining about the incredible paucity of images. I mean, we go into orbit around an entirely new class of world on Saturday, right? NASA does nothing. It doesn't have a press conference, doesn't have a live video from JPL. It does nothing that it normally does when you come up to a new planet. In its entire, you know, 50-year history, NASA has never ignored a new planet. Except this time, you get one image per week.
And let's
that's
go.
Weird. It's like they're dragging their feet against the inevitable that they know is coming, and they can't change what's coming, but they can damn well try to slow it down.
Well, we shall see. If that's all the case, why didn't they tell us about the face on Mars? Why did they keep that a secret?
Much too soon, and it was part of the cover-up. Remember, if I'm talking about a plan which has only kind of come to light recently, think of a third force. Think of actually the model here would be Isaac Asimov's classic Foundation trilogy. Remember the Foundation trilogy, George, where you had this overwhelming tyrannical galactic empire?
You then had a small group of scholars called the Foundation, which was predicting the end of the Galactic Empire, and the Galactic Empire smokes it out, finds out where they're headquartered, and destroys them.
It was the end of them.
But there was a second Foundation buried in the heart of the Empire itself that they never suspected, which ultimately wins in the end.
Yeah.
That could be the model that we're living through right now. I mean, look at this. There are all kinds of weird coincidences. On August 2nd, Elenine will come within range of NASA's Stereo B satellite spacecraft out there in Earth's orbit millions of miles away. They're going to turn the satellite around and take the first real close-up data of Elenine, which might begin to tell us what this thing is. What else is going to happen August 2nd, George?
Budget day, babe.
We hit the debt ceiling.
Yep.
Is this coincidental? There are layers and layers and layers. Look, this thing arriving closest to Earth at 19 hours, 50 minutes, Greenwich Mean Time, that says it all. This is part of a big, big plan, and we don't know how it's going to turn out, but this audience can help it turn out the right way by making noise, by sending Obama lots and lots of email, by demanding of NASA full disclosure of the imagery of Vesta at a much more rapid rate than one image per week. Give me a break.
And it's the image they want. Jack, first-time caller, Hollywood, California. Go ahead, Jack.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Hey, good pleasure. And Richard.
You've got him.
Hello.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's one of a kind, I'll tell you that.
Yes, it's something. It's like, maybe so much science fiction that you can, you know, make movies from, you know. But, yeah, you know, when you talk about the President Obama, I noticed that back then in 2008, everything changed. All the plans, all the great things that he was talking about that he was going to do, and all this and that. Everything changed in September.
Remember when it changed? I can give you the exact night it changed, December 9th, 2009.
Yes.
What happened that night?
Yes, when George Bush came out and said he needed $700 billion with Hank Paulson to stabilize because the market crashed, then there's no money. Then all the money went to the banks, went to the, you know, to Wall Street so that they could get fatter. But
well, I was thinking something a little later.
Obama was going to go,
excuse me, to Norway to pick up his Nobel Prize. Look, he got a Nobel Prize for doing what?
Yeah,
Who in history ever gets a Nobel Prize for what they're going to do?
Yeah. But,
and everybody said he's getting the prize for what he's going to do. Well, what happened the night before he gets to Norway to pick up his Nobel Prize?
That's the spiral, right?
The most incredible celestial phenomenon that looked like something out of a sci-fi science fiction wormhole movie appears. And if you have inside information, if you know exactly what it is and who's behind it, and you'd interpret it as a threat, like, don't do what you're planning to do. It was after that that the entire plan to go back to the moon got derailed. A lot of the left plans in terms of our society suddenly got unfulfilled. Certain things never got done. Certain things preoccupied the administration for an entire year that a lot of people don't know what the point of all that argument was. In other words, the best laid plans of mice and men can be deterred if the threat is big enough, if the stakes are big enough, and if the time frame is big enough.
Let's go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut, east of the Rockies. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, Richard. Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Hi. As you know well, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I'm on space.com every day, and I get Aviation Week and Space Technology Magazine and a myriad of astronomy magazines on top of that. I have a one-sentence statement that you didn't mention and then one question for you. The one-sentence statement is that I know you know of, but you didn't mention. A little over a day from now, Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, NASA is going to come out with a press conference publicly announcing where the MSL, Mars Science Laboratory rover Curiosity, will land, the landing site, which will either be Gale Crater or Eberswald Crater on Mars. And then my question, you can comment on that too, but my question is about the James Webb Space Telescope. The reason why I worry what you're saying in total about Obama and the Congress voting more money for NASA may unfortunately not be true was that, as you also know, the House Science Justice and Commerce Committee essentially killed, at least the committee, the James Webb Space Telescope, which is the follow-on to the Hubble Space Telescope.
Bill, we don't have much time before the shuttle burn here, so let me cut to the chase.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All of what you're saying is true, except it's A, D, and B, C. If what I'm projecting is going to happen, everything you think you know about the politics and NASA and everything goes thrown out the window, and we start a whole new ball game. They don't call it a game changer for nothing. Think back to where we were when Sputnik hit the headlines and people went outside. I remember vividly myself going out and looking with a neighbor's binoculars and this little twink moving across the western sky after sunset, and everybody was riveted. It was like the dawn of a new world. That's the psychology that will whip around the world via the internet at the speed of light if, in fact, at some point CNN or CBS, the deorbit burn is underway.
The burn is underway?
Is coming home. If that modality that I'm talking about comes true, everything changes, and tonight becomes the end of the beginning and not the beginning of the end.
Next up, we go to St. Louis. It's Tom's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll try to make this quick. For years, scientists have wondered what kind of propulsion UFOs are using. Well, propulsion utilizes Isaac Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Well, UFOs have a mobility method which is much faster and safer than propulsion. It doesn't use fuel or energy as we know and understand energy.
Sure.
If we're using rockets for space travel, it's barking up the wrong tree. If we are to take the next step beyond the shuttle, let's get rid of the rockets and find out what this method of mobility is all about.
You know, Obama said the other day in a very curious statement, Georgia had no referent, NASA needs fundamentally new technology.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Was he presaging something to come?
Maybe.
Is he giving us hints?
No.
I mean, this is one of the biggest stay tunes we've ever done, George, because you're going to know in the next few months if any of this is more than merely scenario projection.
You give government too much credit.
No, I give intelligent people who have a long 1,000-plus-year time frame and perspective credit, not government.
See, I only trust the good guys, Richard. I don't trust them.
Well, we can have that argument some other night.
Speaking of arguments and other nights, is your event in Leeds, England, a debate or a presentation? What is it?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of people. I mean, there's Steve Bassett, our friend. There's Ian Crane. There's Bryce Zabel. There's Richard Dolan, who's talking about the secret space program. Richard Hall, Andrew Johnson, Stephen Jones, just a few here. Max Burns.
Andrew
Nick
Johnson,
Pope,
would you
know,
go back into time and pull him out?
And it's going to be in Leeds on the night of the 6th for me, which is Saturday. Just go to the web, exopolitics-leeds.co.uk, and you'll find all of us there and how you can get tickets and show up, and I'm going to show you some astonishing imagery.
I think it's great that you participate in that and that you're doing a lot more international stuff.
Well, it's demand. It's public demand. You know, Robin and I get to see a lot of the world because people want to see what we've been researching, and I want to correspond to their wishes.
Next up, let's go to one or two more callers. Jeff in Mendocino, California. Hey, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I want to tell you how the space program has affected me. I was born within a month of Sputnik going up. But before I get into that, I want to ask you if the shuttle is going to be going over the West Coast or what the track is towards Florida. I'd really like to go out after the show and look up in the sky and watch them on their last lap.
Well, unfortunately, it's going to be a long walk for you because it's coming up across the Yucatan, across the little isthmus between Cuba and the eastern part of Mexico. In fact, it's going to cross at about 100,000 feet directly above the ruins.
Way too south.
That were found 2,500 feet down off the west coast of Cuba that Paulina Zelitsky thought might be some of the ruins of Atlantis. So literally in the next few minutes, Atlantis will cross at 100,000 feet the possible echoes of its very namesake.
Next up, Lewiston, Idaho. Hey, Ralph, thanks for holding so long.
Good morning, George, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm listening to you on Cozy out of Lewiston, Idaho. Good morning, Richard. My question is, a few centuries ago, we were told that the shape of our solar system was geocentric, nanoscience progressed. We were told, well, no, it's heliocentric. My question is, why does it have to be anything-centric? Why can't it be some other shape? Both satisfies our observations of the movements of the planets and the mathematics which describe those movements.
All right.
Now go ahead and hang
up. All right, you got that.
Okay, those are just coordinate systems depending upon where you're measuring from. They don't define the actual shape at all. So it's basically a human convention as opposed to something which is fundamental.
Richard, you know, as we look at this, and of course Vesta being the most current with Elenine right behind it, what else is there? I mean, there's got to be a third object somewhere, huh?
Well, remember in Rama at the end, Arthur wrote that they come in threes, so I'm expecting other surprises. I mean, this is the year 2011 when amazing things are happening. Didn't you find it kind of weird, George, that the House voted a $111 billion cut with no specifics in its bill, just the number 111? And Elenine arrives at Earth in alignment with the three inner planets.
See, I think all this is done subconsciously. I actually don't think I don't think they're smart enough to figure these things out.
But see, you and I can have a wonderful discussion some night as to the evidence for fingerprints, people doing it as opposed to subconscious. If it's subconscious, George, it's part of the physics itself.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
We're in resonance.
You and Jordan Maxwell probably think it's all planned.
No. I obviously debate every single data point because you're right. It could be part of the furniture. It could be part of the fabric of reality. The art form is to figure out which is which.
Well, that is so true. Richard, thank you so much. Richard C. Hoagland's website, enterprisemission.com. He's got his own link to Facebook as well. And those of you who want to go to England to see him or might be out there, he'll be there on August 6th. And I'll be back tomorrow with Psychic Prediction Night on Coast to Coast. A.M. For Dan Galante, Michelle Lee, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast A.M. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.